It's wonderful to learn together as we approach Pesach Tavshin Ayin Hei Haba Aleinu L'Tova. So it's a challenge sometimes because as we've done, we've prepared for Pesach so many times over so many years, so we have to always find new ideas and new divrei Torah, new aspects. So I don't believe that anything, I shouldn't say anything, but much of what we're sharing here is new this year. And then when I went afterwards to review, I don't think we've shared too many of these ideas in the past. And if we did, it's a little chazara. But otherwise, we're going to try to start from the beginning. So my goal for this morning is to share 10 different ideas for the Haggadah that we can either share at our table or think about as we approach Pesach and how we're going to think about our Seder. So the first observation I'd like to consider as we think about Maggid in general is the whole idea of Maggid, right? Maggid is about telling the story, and the specific mitzvah of the night, as many have observed, is different than the regular Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's not just mentioning the Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's specifically in the context of She'ila Uchuva. It's through questions and answers. So I'd like to observe one simple observation, and that is that in truth, even though we have so many questions, we have the questions of the four sons, and then there are different questions that kind of pop up through the discussion of the Seder. I think it's all really surrounding one core question. The Seder is about one question, and it's really important that we are able to identify this question and answer the question for ourselves. Because if we can't answer this question for ourselves, we're never going to be able to answer it for anybody else who asks us. And that question is essentially one fundamental one: why be Jewish? You know, the Chacham frames it as Maha Eidus V'Hachukim. What are all the laws about? And the Rasha says Ma'avodas Oslachem. And the She'ini Adil Lishol doesn't even know to ask. He's just kind of like sitting at the table. Either he's apathetic or he's too much of a simpleton. But the idea that we have to be able to articulate, first to ourselves and to other people, why it is geschmack, why it's important, why it's meaningful, why it's great to be a Jew. Why is it great to be an observant, engaged, growth-oriented, involved Jew? And I'm not going to answer that question because it's really for everybody to find their own answer to ba'avur zeh. What is the answer to ba'avur zeh? For this purpose. Well, for what? So we have to be able to answer that question, because if we can't answer that question, then I think they say in the name of the Lubavitcher Rebbe that there was a fifth son. Just like there's a fifth kos that we don't drink, and there's a fifth statement in the Aramid Ovidavi, a fifth pasuk that we don't say, and that there is a fifth lashon of Geula, that Vayivyeinu, that we don't say. So there may be a fifth son who doesn't come to the Seder, because he decided that to the point where it just doesn't speak to him at all. So today, we live in a world of many choices. Already in the 19th century, they had choices, but they didn't have choices like we have today. And people are choosing all the time. And especially adolescents are choosing all the time. They make choices. And if they don't have a compelling reason why they should choose yes, why they should vote yes for Yiddishkeit, so then very often they're going to vote no in various different ways, whether it's like full-blown, whether it's just going to be emotionally not excited, whether their Yiddishkeit is going to be dead. And we think about it in terms of other people, but it's true for ourselves. We're always making choices. And the question is, why choose Yiddishkeit? And that's so much about what we have to answer at the Seder. Of course, we're passing on something to the next generation. We're engaging and we're trying to teach. But for what? What is the answer to the question? You know, Manishtana, what's so different? Why are we doing what we're doing? So we're doing what we're doing to be different, to be able to tell you, Bavur Zed, to tell you the story that we went from Genus to Shevach. But it's really important to think about the for what. Lama, for what end? And to be able to answer that question for ourselves, why is it that we want to come to shul? It's not we're forced to come to shul. Why do we want to make a Seder? It's not that we're obligated to make a Seder. You know, imagine for yourself, if you woke up one morning, and this has happened in certain day schools, you woke up one morning and you got called down to the principal's office, or you found out from the rabbi, he sent you a text message, oh, it turns out you're actually not Jewish. So what would you do? I'd make a beeline for the mikvah. That's what I would do. I feel like I don't want to miss out even 5 minutes. You know, so how many people would choose to head for the mikvah, and how many people would head for Burger King? So I'm not saying, all right, so maybe you go for Burger King first on your way to the mikvah. But
is that the wrong answer?
I don't know. If I was going, I probably wouldn't go to Burger King. I'd probably go some.
Sure.
No, exactly. It'd be very pasta. You know, it's just, that was one of my favorite things. The first thing that happened when we moved to Fairlawn, here I am, a new assistant rabbi in the community, and there's a very well-known, there's a Chinese restaurant in Fairlawn. Everybody goes to the Chinese restaurant in Fairlawn. So we're there like 2 weeks. Somebody says, you go to the Chinese restaurant to take out Chinese takeout. So we're great. We're on Morlot, we go into the Chinese takeout restaurant. It's like, looks like every other Chinese restaurant. But I see on the board there, it's like shrimp and crab something. And I'm like, I don't know, maybe it's like the RCBC has some like fake shrimp and fake crab. And we're standing online, we're thinking, we're looking, and I was just kind of like, it was a little bit weird. And then I said to the proprietor, to the guy that is, I'm like, is this kosher? He says, no, kosher next door. Like, it's very nice, you know, the hire the guy the first week, the rabbi's eating in the treif restaurant. All right. So that's the first
option. Sometimes you don't forget.
Right. So that's the first observation about Maggid. We need to be able to answer that question of why we want to be Jewish. And that segues to the second observation that I wanted to share, which is about Halach Ma'anya. Now, Halach Ma'anya, that introduction of the poor man's bread, it's not the way the Rambam said it. The Rambam actually had an introductory phrase to Halach Ma'anya. We don't say it in our Haggadahs, but the Rambam had it. If you look at the Rambam's Nusach of the Haggadah, the Rambam introduced the Haggadah before Halach Ma'anya with the following Aramaic phrase, Bebehilu Yatsanu Mimitzrayim. We left Egypt, Bebehilu. So how do you translate Bebehilu? Well, one way to translate is to say, we left there quickly, speedily. That's true. But there's a much stronger connotation than just we left there quickly. You know, in Hebrew, you say there's a word, behala, and it's Yiddishized. It was behala. It was like chaotic. So the Rambam says, bibihilu yatsanu mi Mitzrayim. We were in a crazed rush to get out of Mitzrayim. So the question is why? Why is it so significant that the Rambam says the first thing you notice when you start the Seder is that when you start Maggid, Bibihilu Yatzanu Mitzrayim, we left, it was in a crazy rush. And that's symptomatic of the whole idea of Kigorshu Mitzrayim V'lo Yachlu L'Hismameah, we couldn't wait around, we were in a rush, we didn't have the matzahs rise, we just had them baked. So there's one element of this, which I think we spoke about once in the past, about being me'al hazman. Rav Kook talks about this in terms of the creation, the formation of the Jewish people as above time, and therefore it has this supernatural quality. So that's one thing, one path we could go down. But there is, I was listening to a shiur recently for Rav Moshe Weinberger, who is a rabbi in the five towns in a shul called Eish Kodesh. So he's half shul rabbi, half Hasidic rebbe. And he's also a mashpia on YU. He's a tremendous personality. So he had a great vort. And I would say it in the following analogy. Imagine you showed up to camp. Some of us went to sleepaway camp when we were younger. So in sleepaway camp, money is not worth that much. Food is the best currency in camp, right? Everybody knows that the kid who has the best snacks, it's much more sought after than the kid who has the thicker wallet, because you can't, what are you going to buy in camp? You can't buy happiness. Bechlal, you can't buy happiness. But even in camp, you certainly can't buy happiness because there's nowhere to buy. You know, the biggest thing is that once every 3 weeks, they take you to Walmart. You know, like that's a Grosse Glick. So the kid who has the snacks, that's the kid who's really happy. So imagine somebody came, imagine you put yourself in the mind of a 14-year-old boy or a 14-year-old girl, but imagine 14-year-old boys for a second. And They're hanging out late at night in their bunk. It's 11:30 at night. They're all up. They're hanging around. And there's a honk outside the bunk. And the ice cream truck shows up in camp. And he starts announcing, free ice cream! So what's going to happen? Mayhem! Complete mayhem! Every kid's going to be climbing on the next kid to get out the door. They're going to be rushing like crazy. Because there's nothing more exciting in camp than ice cream. You know, that's what the... You know, everybody has their fans, their schwitzing. So when you go to the canteen, the top-selling item in camp is generally, it's ice cream. So he pointed out, or Moshe Weinberger pointed out, he didn't use this mashal, but this is my mashal for his idea. He says, this is our chance, it's okay. This is our chance to create something new. This is the new relationship, the new journey that we have in the Rabbono Shalom. We're sitting in Mitzrayim, not just physically enslaved, that's not the main thing. We had no spiritual identity. We were nothing. And all of a sudden, the master of the universe, the creator of everything, comes and he knocks on the door and he says, we're going for a journey. Some of us have the practice when the Seder is over, we read the Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim is this song. It's the song about the boy who knocks on the girl's door and he says, let's go out. And the girl, what is Shleptzach? She says, oh, I'm too tired, I can't get up. By the time she gets to the door, what happens? Dodi, Chamak Avar, he's gone. So imagine like the kids in the camp with the ice cream truck, everybody's so excited. Says Moshe Weinberger, you know what's important to begin the Seder with? B'behilu yatzanu min Mitzrayim. What makes all the difference is whether or not we're excited about it. If we're excited about Yiddishkeit, if we're excited about the Seder, if we're excited about V'higadot Lebincha, then that speaks volumes about why we want to be Jewish. It's point one and point two are really interrelated. B'behilu yatzanu min Mitzrayim, because we are so psyched, we're so pumped that the Rabbono Shalom chose us, that we can't wait to get started. We can't wait to crunch that matzah, man, especially if you're going to go all out with big shiurim and everything. This is great. And some people even here eat the hardcore, you know, the chirein. We're excited about that. All right, maybe we're not so excited about the chirein. But we're excited about Yiddishkeit. If a person doesn't feel that sense of excitement, they're not going to be bebahala. They're not going to move quickly. If you ate ice cream 3 times a day, every day, for 3 weeks, when the ice cream truck stops by, you're not going to get off your bed. You're not going to get off your chair so fast because it's kind of like whatever. So the speed, the alacrity with which we approach the Seder is important. And I would just add, as a parenthetical, more practical note, this is a lofty ideal of Machshava, but it's also true practically. You know, if we want to inspire people at the Seder, we want to be able to convey things at the Seder, we need to be excited. Now, sometimes it's hard to do. This year especially, Seder is going to be on a Friday night, so it's at the end of a long week, and people are going to be exhausted. But whatever strategies we can employ, even if we're exhausted, sometimes we just got to be excited, or pretend like we're excited. Because if we're facilitating a Seder and our spirit is like flatline, so then what are we communicating? We're not communicating the excitement. We're not communicating the bahala. So the speed, the time factor, is a manifestation of the excitement that we have. That's observation number two. Observation number three is the fact that the Seder begins with this introductory paragraph of Halach Ma'anya. So there's a lot to say about Halach Ma'anya, the fact that it's Aramaic, which means it was clearly in the vernacular for the people to understand it's an invitation. And then the second question becomes, well, when did they say Halach Ma'anya? It couldn't be that they said Halach Ma'anya right at the Seder. If it says, Kol Ditzrich Yesiv Yifsach, come eat the Korban Pesach you have to be signed up for in advance. So it could be that they said Halach Ma'anya the week before, and they made a declaration in Shul. So Rav Soloveitchik has this idea that you start the Seder, every meal that has significance in Jewish tradition has to have an element of chesed. So that I had seen in previous years, but this year I came across something amazing, which I think really fits with why we open the Seder with this declaration of Halach Ma'anya. It's way in the back of the Sefer Shmiras HaLashon, of all places. The Chafetz Chaim, who some of you have seen in that video that was going around, which is amazing. So the Chafetz Chaim wrote 2 works on Lashon Hara. He wrote a halachic work called Sefer Chafetz Chaim, which is sometimes published separately. And then he wrote a 2nd work called Shmiras HaLashon, which is more of like the philosophy behind it and the machshava, the emotional component of Shmiras HaLashon. So in this volume, they're actually printed together, and I have to be Makar Tov to Karen Biavna. I got a bunch of Sfarim. This is one of them. They have a special Bekias program that's in memory of all of the boys who were murdered over the years, either through terrorist attacks or in the different wars. So they have a special Bekiyas program. So when I was in the yeshiva, so I got this sefer. And at the end of Sefer Shmiras HaLashon, in the Chasimas HaSefer, literally in like the third to last page, tucked away there, he has an observation which really was unbelievable. First, he mentions, we know, some of us are familiar, the famous Mishnah Pirkei Avos, that the world stands on three things, Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Chasadim. It's good, okay. But then he says something even more. He says, he quotes an Avos, where is it? Here. He says the following, quotes an Avos Rav Nosson with the following introduction, that Gemilas Chasadim is Shkula Kekarbonos. I never knew that. Gemilas Chasadim is the same as offering a sacrifice. He quotes Avos Rav Nosson, Al Gemilas Chasadim Ketzad, Harehu Omer, Ki Chesed Chafatzti Velo Zevach. Pasuk in Hosea, the Rebbe Shem says, he wants Chesed. You can bring as many animals as you want, but if you're a cruel and selfish, self-absorbed person, that's not what we're interested in. He says, Ha'olam mitchila lo nivra ela b'chesed, ki amarti olam chesed yibane. And then it tells a story. And this is now, based on this story, I can understand why we're going to start the Seder with it, especially in exile, which may fit with why it's in Aramaic. Kol dich v'nyesev yechol, everybody come eat. If you're speaking in Aramaic, it's likely that you're living in Babylonia. Okay, says the story. Pam achas, one time, hay Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai yotzim Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was leaving Yerushalayim. Who was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? He was the leader of Torah Judaism at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. He escaped with his life and reestablished Jewish life in Yavne. So he's living at that period of destruction. The Gemara in Kitten has a lot to say about the biography of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. V'haya Rabbi Yeshua holeich acharav. Rabbi Yeshua followed after him. Rabbi Yeshua is from the five rabbis Seder fame. V'ro Beis HaMikdash chariv. And he saw the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Om Rabbi Yeshua. Oy lanu. Makom shemiskaprim bo avonoseinu shu chariv. Woe is to us. You know, we used to get a kapara. We used to have atonement from the korbanos that were offered in the Beis HaMikdash. So look, it's tebach. Terrible. Nebach. Omer lo. B'ni. Al yiravu levavcha. Do not feel bad. Yesh lanu kapara achera shehi kamosa. You can find another kapara. Shehi kamosa. That's equivalent of offering the sacrifices. Which, if you think about it from a biblical standpoint, from a chumash standpoint, how many parshios, how many psukim, how many words are devoted to the world of karbonos? We're in the middle of Navayikra, Tzav, Shemini, we're going to get more. He says, what's that? Ve'ize zekimilas chasadim. Chesed. Sheneemar ki chesed chafatzti v'lo zevach. So when I saw this piece from the Holy Chafetz Chaim, I said, oh, now I understand why. Because you're going to sit down to the Seder, you're going to feel like, oh, you know what? It's a nice Seder, it's going to be beautiful, but we don't have a Korban Pesach. So we're missing our Korban, which is true. But there's one replica, the stand-in of the Korban Pesach. And what is that? That's Gemilas Chasadim. So before you start your meal, we say, look, we don't have a Korban Pesach, but instead we're going to do Gemilas Chasadim. We're going to say, anybody who's hungry, Yesev Yifsach. And that could be on multiple levels. The same way that perhaps the statement was made a week before. So that means either you call the rabbi and see maybe there's somebody who needs a Seder, or you make a donation to any one of many, whether it's the Ark or the Chicago Chesed Fund or whatever organization you know is involved. This morning I was at Moshe Chitim, as you know, we're packing, they had Gevaldik, their back boxes are coming and going. That is a way to be mekayim, so to speak. I'm not making it up. It says, it's stated in the Shemiras HaLosh, it quotes in the Avos Rav Nosson. That is a way to fulfill the aspect of a carbon through Gemilas Chasadim. That was so beautiful, and that's a great introduction to the Seder. Okay, so now we mentioned the five rabbis, and I'll make this observation. Some of you have seen it in Rabbi Jonathan Sacks' Haggadah, but I thought it was such an interesting and novel approach. I thought it was really interesting. The five rabbis who were at the Seder in Bnei Brak, right? Who are the five rabbis? Rebbe Lezer and Rebbe Yeshua and Rebbe Lezer ben Azariah and Rebbe Akiva and Rebbe Tarfon. So who's missing from this story? Rebbe Gamliel. Rebbe Gamliel was theoretically, he was the most senior rabbinic figure at that time. And there's a Tosefta who points out, and if you want this whole essay, you check Rabbi Sachs' Haggadah. It's amazing. I'm just sharing it. I'll regalachas. He points out that there's a Tosefta that says Rabbi Gamliel was in Lud at the Seder of Baitis Ben Zunin. What's he doing with Baitis Ben Zunin? Why is he not in the Seder in Bnei Brak? And why are they in Bnei Brak? So this is probably a question that's well known to many. Bnei Brak was the hometown of Rabbi Akiva. But the Gemara says in Maseches Bava Basra that when you have a table, there's actually an etiquette how to sit at the table. And that the most senior person in the table sits in the center of the circle of the table. And then the next person sits to the right, and then to the left. They have a whole Seder. They have a whole organization of how they should sit at the Seder table. So it's Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon. So that means that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is sitting at the head of the table, because he's in the middle, right? Of the five people that we mentioned, if they're mentioned in order, so Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is in the middle. Why is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in the middle of the table? It should have been Rabbi Akiva. It's Rabbi Akiva's home court advantage. So Rabbi Sachs points out that this story may have taken place at an extremely, extremely sensitive time in the Torah world. What's that? Because we have also in the Haggadah the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who says, "Hare ani kaven shivim shana." Why is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah saying, "I am as if I were 70 years old"? Because the Gemara tells us in Brachos that Rabbi Gamliel, obviously, he was a great tzaddik and he was a very righteous man, but he had an incredibly tough standard. He had a very exacting standard for his students. And there is an approach like that, and there is a place for that. But the Gemara says that the Chachamim got together and said that at some point, it just went too far. Because he had an opinion that everybody had to follow about the calculation for Yom Kippur, and Rabbi Yeshua disagreed with him, and he had Rabbi Yeshua come to the Beis Medrash on his day, and then he had Rabbi Yeshua stand, and the other rabbis said, "Excuse me, Rabbi Gamliel, that's not respectful." And they fired him. They fired Rabbi Gamliel from being the chief rabbi, from the Nasi. And then they were in search of somebody who should take his place. Well, that's not an easy thing to fill, especially because they were concerned there was going to be tension with Rabbi Gamliel, having been the ex-Nasi, still around. And even if they were great rabbinic figures, there's still some difference of opinion. Not so much a personal dispute. It's not a personal thing. It's Rabbi Gamliel was extremely, extremely exacting, and others felt that the method should be more populist. And there are Mesorah's traditions for both. Ultimately, the Gemara says they settled on Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but who was a young man. And that's why he says, "Hare ani kaven shivim shana," because the Gemara has a tradition that he grew white hair in his beard to appear as if he was older. Probably my favorite part of that Gemara is when they came to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and said, "We'd like you to be the chief rabbi." So you can imagine, this is like one of the most tumultuous times. It's an opportunity to really shape the course of the Jewish future. You know what he says? He says, "I have to ask my wife." That's what the Gemara says. He says, "I have to go talk to my wife, and then I'll let you know." That's what the Gemara says in Brachos. But here comes the most dramatic part, because there is a long-standing machlokas among the sages about the following question. Today, we're sitting at the Seder, and we're enjoying our Divrei Torah. So some people Seder, they're looking at their watch. Why are they looking at their watch? Because ideally, Shulchan Aruch says, and many Achronim point out, it's best to have your afikomen before Chatzos. Well, I don't know what time Chatzos is this year. It's usually around 12:30, something like that, 12:31. So why is it the best thing to eat your afikomen before Chatzos? So here's the story. There is a machlokas between Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva as to whether or not the Korban Pesach is allowed to be eaten all night or only until Chatzos. And the afikomen is the stand-in for the Korban Pesach. Not just that. There is a debate among the Rishonim, interestingly, it's not so well known, which is the main matzah that you eat at the Seder. So, generally we assume the main matzah is the first one that you eat, but there were some Rishonim who were of the opinion that the afikomen is the main matzah that you're eating, the same way in the old days that they used to eat the matzah with the Korban Pesach at the end of the meal.
So then the Korban Pesach is always eaten at the end. It's eaten ala sova on a full, semi-full stomach. So therefore, you're going to eat the Korban Pesach at the end with the matzah and the maror. So the matzah, the afikoman, is the main mitzvah of matzah. So if you put all the pieces together, it could be that you're only yotzei the mitzvah of achilas matzah if your matzah is supposed to be eaten at the same time as Korban Pesach, and you assume that achilas matzah is before chatzos, so then you got to eat your afikoman before chatzos. And then the Ramah adds that then, therefore, it's also preferable that you should actually have all four cups before chatzos, because the four cups are tied into your whole Seder. So therefore, he says it's best actually to finish the four cups before chatzos. So different people have different practices about this. I heard this in the name of the Gaon the Tzaddik, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that apparently Rav Shlomo Zalman used to tell people that you also have to keep other cheshbonos in, because Me'ikar Adin, we assume that you're yotze with your first matzah, and perhaps even you don't make her, it's machlokas rishon, and maybe you are yotze with matzah all night. There's a lot of mitigating factors. Sometimes you have someone who cooked a very beautiful meal, and they worked very hard on it, and they slaved in the kitchen. And then what's going to happen? Everybody finishes their Divrei Torah. It turns around. It's like 12 minutes till chatzos, and they're about to start Shulchan Aruch. So what are they going to say? Pack up the food and save it for another time? How's the person who worked on that meal going to feel about that? So you have to pace yourself. You have to be a chacham to know, yes, there's a mitzvah achilas matzah. You have to know what's a mitzvah daraisa, what's derabanan, what's a chumrah, and to make sure to balance that with the other needs of your Seder, like kavod abrios, like v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, like kibud av v'eim, all those other mitzvahs that are also mitzvahs daraisa, also on the night of the Seder. So we should make sure to keep that all balanced. Rabbi Sachs points out, wait a second, who is sitting at the Seder? Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, he is the one who paskins that the mitzvah of Pesach is only until Chatzos. Rebbe Akiva, he's the one who says that it's all night. So according to Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, when do they stop Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim? At Chatzos. According to Rebbe Akiva, you're going to go all night. So this becomes a big discussion. Now, he formulates in a certain way, but maybe we could just kind of summarize it, which is that whether it was intentional or not intentional, whether Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah couldn't stop the discussion because everybody was so involved, didn't realize he didn't stop the discussion, didn't want to stop the discussion, because whatever the factor is, the bottom line was, at the end of the night, they were still talking. They were still learning. And for some reason, we don't know what it is, Rabbi Sachs has a suggestion, but whether it's that suggestion or a different suggestion, at the end of the day, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah did not stand up at the table, bang on the table and say, I'm the Nasi, I say we stop now. It could be that they changed. There's some people who say that they weren't actually doing Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim after Chatzos, they were doing the Halachas of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Halachas of Korban Pesach, whatever it is. But you know what? They worked it out to have the Seder together. They were able to figure out how to navigate it, that everybody should be able to have the Seder together. And it's just such an interesting idea. Obviously, sometimes there are halachic boundaries, and those boundaries are boundaries. There's nothing you can do about it. But however Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah was able to work it out according to his opinion, he was able to work it out, and that everybody was able to have the Seder together, to the point where they were still talking, they were still at the same table all night. So sometimes that is a challenge for us, and I think it's a nice idea in theory, and it's also an important thing to keep in mind in practice, which is not every Seder table has everybody on the same page, let's just say. You know, sometimes you have people with different religious perspectives on things. Sometimes you have people with different ages. Sometimes you have people who are cranky and some people are more easygoing. You have all kinds of people at the Seder. And we start the Seder, we start with the five Zakenim. These five rabbis, they had very different opinions about many different things. And they had even a different opinion about how the Seder should run. And yet, somehow, they were able to make this Seder work for all these rabbis. Even though Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah was sitting at the head of the table, he was at the top. He was in the middle, which means he was the Nasi. But at the end of the day, they worked it all out together. And everybody had the Seder together. So it's something we should think about, how to make sure that we can work it out and all have the Seder together. Okay, point number five. We start the Seder with a question, which is, you know, why is this night different? And we give the answer. What's the answer? The answer is maskil beginus. We start with the bed, umisayim b'shevach. We tell the whole story
with the bad first and then the good second. Of course, you can only appreciate the good if you think about it in the context of the bad, so that's the basic frame. The machlokas in the Gemara is, what is bad and what is good? What's genus, what is indignity, and what's shevach, what's praise? So one opinion is, avodim hayinu vayotzienu, we were slaves, it was physically bad, and then we were taken out, vayotzienu. But the other opinion is, no, it's a spiritual journey, so it's mitchila ov de avodah zarah, first we were idol worshippers, and then v'achshav kervanu hamakom. So it's interesting to think about, why is it that the Baal HaGadah has to remind us about the fact that we were idol worshippers? Even if you want to talk about maschil b'genus, like terach, we generally see ourselves as a clean break from before Avram Avinu. The Avram, the iconoclast, the crushing the idols. So you have to come back to terach. Like, why? Why have to talk about terach? You have to make us feel like we mamish came from nothing. So I think there are two reasons that we have to go back that far. The first one is the Avram Avinu, we could call the Avram versus Moshe distinction. There is a book, it's called Tzir Vitzon, it's from Rav Moshe Lichtenstein from Gush. So he makes an interesting observation in that book. He points out that Moshe Rabbeinu, you know everything about his life. You know who his parents were. You know where he was born. You know where he was raised. You know who his wife was. You know where he met his wife. You know where his kids were born. You know his life story. You know the whole thing, where he died, where he was buried. Avram Avinu, you only know half the story. Forgetting the Midrashim for right now, just in the Chumash itself, I don't know anything about him. I don't know where he grew up. I don't know what his youth was like. I don't know where he met Sarah. A Shechter likes to say, maybe he met her at a New Year's party. Who knows? Maybe it was a pagan festival. I don't know. Who knows? So what's the difference? So one suggestion might be that you're right. There's only one Moshe Rabbeinu. There's only one Adon Hanavim. There's only one person the Boshem is going to speak to them directly. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. So to be Moshe Rabbeinu, everything has to be literally, like the Navi says about Yirmiyahu, I chose you before you were even born. The Baruch Shalom says to Yirmiyahu, you were set for this task before you were even conceived. This was going to be your role. So yeah, for Moshe Rabbeinu, he has to be of a specific pedigree, he has to have a specific upbringing, and he has to have a very, very specifically kind of drawn pathway. But here's the thing. We're not expected to be Moshe Rabbeinu. But you know what we are expected to be? We're expected to be Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is chosen. Why? Because Ki Yedatev Lamana Sheyitzave Es Banu Ves Beitzer Acharav. The Baal Shem says, "I know he will teach his kids." V'shamu Derech Hashem Alasos Tzedaka Umishpat, to follow in the ways of godliness and to do the right thing. Through Tzedaka Umishpat. You know what? Everybody can do that. And for that reason, nobody can say where Avraham Avinu came from. Because if they did, maybe you could say, look, Avraham Avinu, he had a day school education. I went to Chveis, what do we have around, what's called New Trier or Stevenson or any of these people? What's that?
Terrible.
This people say, people could say, I went to a public high school. It's public or private high school, these high schools. Public high school. People could say, you can't expect me to become a great Jew. I only went to public school. The answer is, who cares whether he went to public school? Avraham Avinu didn't go to public school. He went to pagan school. So don't say, nobody could say, I went to public school. There's no hope for me. Chas v'shalom. That's why at the Seder, Mitchilo of the Avodah Zarah, I say it's Dafka. It's Dafka, you say, everybody came from Ov the Avodah Zarah. So nobody could say, look, you know, there's no hope for me. I didn't have a Jewish education. My parents weren't observant. My this wasn't observant. Doesn't matter. Everybody has hope. Doesn't matter if you had no parents. Doesn't matter if you... It doesn't matter. That's exactly the point. Right? You could go to any school. You can go to no school. You could have gone to Catholic school. But guess what? Avraham Avinu could do it. You could do it also. You could do it also. Go on the journey and you'll find it. So I'm sure today there are many, many Avraham Avinus who went to one of these places called New Trier and Stevenson, all these places here that are public high schools. You have tons of Avraham Avinus in our own community. They don't say, oh, you know what, I went to public high school. I have no chance of becoming a great Torah personality. It's not true.
It's absolutely not true. So I think that's one thing. And that's also, by the way, very important in terms of Vigarata Labincha. You know, and we, some of the people in this room, I admire them so much because they went on this journey. You know, it's easy for me to say, yeah, I went to a Jewish high school. I went to a Torah high school. Many people in this room probably didn't have that luxury, didn't have that gift. And, you know, it's easy for me to say, so I can't say it. But the people in this room who went to a public high school can tell their children and the other children that it doesn't matter whether they went to public high school. You could still become a Ben or a Bas Torah. Look, you know, I'm devoting my time, my world, my life to Yiddishkeit. It's amazing. And so those of us who didn't go to public high school, you know, it's just a nice vort. But for the people who did, who didn't come from that background, they need to be able to tell everybody. They need to tell all the kids, you know, how inspiring that is. One of the things my mother-in-law told me, and Mirza Shemnili is going to do this program after Pesach, my mother-in-law told me that they did an amazing program in her high school last year. Three mothers of three girls in the school came. All the mothers did not come from observant backgrounds. And they told all the girls about their journey. And she said, it was so inspiring. So Mirza Shem, we schnarred the idea. We're going to do it after Pesach in the community. Such an amazing idea. It's mamish like the life of Avraham Avinu. They left everything that they had and they went on this journey. And how much of an hashpa it had. She said, how impact, she said she was moved. Everybody was moved. It was such a powerful thing. So that's mitchila. That's number one. It doesn't matter where you went to high school. It doesn't matter where your background was from. Avraham Avinu says, he can do it, you can do it too. That's Aleph. Number two, it's almost like the reverse, but I think it's also a similar idea. Your grandfather and your grandmother, they were spiritual super people. They were able to accomplish what nobody else in the world could accomplish. And that's in your spiritual DNA. It's a beautiful teaching in the Chovos HaTalmidim from the Holy Pius Setzner. It's like the bedrock of his whole work for adolescence. You come from somebody special. Don't think you come from nothing. You come from someone. You come from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. You come from Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. Realize what a family you come from. You know, maybe your parents weren't this or your grandparents, but you come from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They were willing to turn the whole world upside down. Right? Think about what it means, Avraham HaIvri. It means, imagine, let's say, I'm visiting someone's house and they tell me their address. They tell me their address is, you know, they tell me the address of the shul, 3800 Dempster. So I write it down on a little piece of paper. Now, I'll be honest with you, when I do this, I usually take the achenu in the car also, because I need to check every few blocks, because I don't always remember. What did I say? What did I say? So I wrote it down. I wrote it down from the achenu. I took the piece of paper in my car, and I write it down. But I get to the gas station, I fill up with gas, I say to somebody, you know, where is the congregation oratorio? They say, oh, congregation oratorio, it's 3900 Dempster. So really? I have it written down. It says 3,800. They said, no, it's 3,900. I go the next block. I stop the next guy on the street corner. I say, do you know where is Ortor? They say, yeah, 3,900 Dempster. You stop 100 people on the street. You know, after the 95th person, you know what you start wondering? Maybe I wrote it wrong. 90 people have just told me it's 3,900. It's not 3,800. Avraham Avinu is knocking on doors. Everybody's telling him, it's paganism. It's paganism. It's pagan. At a certain point, wouldn't you start to wonder, like, I'm the only guy. Like, maybe it's me. Well, it is. It was him. But you start to wonder, like, Avraham HaIvri, meaning he was on Eiver HaShini. Everybody was on one side. He was on the other side. Mitchilo of the Avodah Zarah Hayu Avosenu. Our great-grandfather and our great-grandmother, they had the spiritual strength, they had the fortitude to be able to say no to the rest of the world. And say yes to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So you know what that says about us. That means we've got that in ourselves. We've got it in our DNA. We have the ability. We come from Avraham Avinu. Don't say that you're a nobody. You are a somebody. Your great-grandfather was Avraham Avinu, who changed the whole world in his hands.
Rabbi?
Yes?
What if a person is converted?
So the Gemara says like this, that when a person is converted, they become like descendants of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. That's why there's a discussion about Mikra Bikurim. We're going to read the psukim of Aramid Ovid Avi, right? In the Seder, those four psukim that we're going to darshan, it says that we were in Egypt, God took us out of Egypt, he brought us to this place. Wait a second.
can a convert say the verses of the first fruits? Because he wasn't in Egypt. So he paskin, yeah, Rambam says, yes, he can. Ah, his family technically wasn't Egypt, doesn't matter. Because when you become part of the Jewish family, so it's as if Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were your grandparents. And that's why some say, I think in Chazal, they have this lashon when it says Avram was Av Hamon Goyim, Avram was the father of all the nations, it means specifically all of those holy sparks that are going to convert, they're all descendants from Avram. So that's why Poskim say, a ger also, when he says the Shimon Esrei, he says, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu, our fathers, even though he wasn't biologically descendant, or she wasn't biologically descended from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But the Shimon Esrei says, and this we paskin, ger is mevi v'kore, they bring their bikurim. Okay, I'm getting off the tangent, of course, running out of time. All right, let's go to number six. Tzei Olamad. So this is, for some people, it's the most boring part of the Haggadah. This is where you take four verses from Parshas Kisavo, of the bringing of the first fruits, and you darshan them, you break it down one at a time. So then you take one phrase, Aramid Ovidavi, next phrase, Vayerid Mitzrayma, Vayogar Sham, Bimseima'at. And each one, the rabbis have a full exposition. So the question is, why did we choose these psukim from Aramid Ovidavi? Why don't we, if you're going to summarize the Yetzias Mitzrayim in verses and then break it down, you could have picked psukim in, I don't know, which parsha would you have chosen? Bishalach? Bo? Right? That's what I would have picked. That's what you would have picked too. So why did you pick these? So there are different explanations. I think in different years we've talked about different aspects. But I think there's one way to think about this one, different than we've thought about in the past. And that is the introduction to that paragraph. Tzei ulamad, go and learn. If the Seder night is about the fundamentals of Judaism, if it's about understanding what are the basic building blocks of being a Jew, one of the building blocks is Tzei ulamad, being a learner. You've got to be committed to learning for a lifetime. That's what this section is about. It's not enough to tell the story. It's not enough to tell the story through questions and answers. You have to tell the story and learn it. Learn it like the rabbis learned it. Learn it with rabbinic tradition. The in between the lines. What's the significance of this verse? What are the added layers of interpretation? So b'msei ma'at means with a few people. Well, the rabbis said additional level of interpretation is how many people they went down with. And then what happened to them? So it's one thing, hamar b'lesap harezim b'shubach, to expand the story is great. But I think the idea of learning, the focus on tzei ulamad, making sure that part of our identity as Jews is one of learning. I think that's one of the messages that we're going to take away from the Seder. Good. Number seven. In that context, it describes Vayareu Osanu HaMitzrim. The Mitzrim did what? So Vayareu Osanu is a very grammatically problematic phrase. It should have said Vayareu Lanu HaMitzrim. And the Mitzrim did bad to us. That's what it should have said. So I saw an idea from the Teferet Shlomo, the Holy Reb Shlomo of Radomsk. An amazing idea. You know, until this year, I always thought, and I think this idea appears in the Netziv maybe, that Vayareu Osanu HaMitzrim is a sign that says, no dogs, no Jews. Vayareu Osanu, they dehumanized us. They said that we were bad. And then, of course, once you dehumanize someone, anything is possible. So no dogs, no Jews, that's Vayareu Osanu. I thought that was the first pshat. But then I saw this year a beautiful new pshat based on a Teferet Shlomo. The Teferet Shlomo says something amazing. He says that every person has to be freed from Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim, Meitzara, the straits. It's the Yetzer Hara. It's the negative parts of our neshama that are eating away, are holding back at our neshama. Our neshama is pure. It's a chelek alokami mal. And what happens? When we don't fulfill our potential, there's like a little bit of rust that gets on the neshama. There's like a little bit of, I don't know, like moths that eat away a little bit, lo and leinu. Obviously, at its core, it can't be touched, but it starts hampering us. So what do we do? Every year, we need to get out of Mitzrayim. We need to get out of the clutches of the Yetzer Hara. We need to free ourselves. And the Rabbanu Shalom frees us every year. We tap into that spiritual energy. So the last time Rabbi Loeb was here, he spoke at Kol Yom Rishon. He quoted from Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, who says that all of his books, you know, he's written like scores of books. He says they could all be distilled to one yesod, one principle. And what's that? Self-esteem. Self-esteem is the biggest challenge. So now I understand. What's the Yetzer Hara's biggest trick? You know what he tells us? He says, you know where you've been. You know what you've done. You know where you've gone. He says, forget about it. Don't bother. You're a nobody. Your life is worthless. You have nothing to offer. Do you know the sins that you've done? You know the fruit that you ate from the forbidden tree? Don't bother. The Yetzer Hara's plan is to take away our self-esteem. It's to keep us in the clutches of the Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim in the sense of Vayareu Osanu HaMitzrim. The Mitzrayim, the Yetzer Hara, you know what he says to us? He says, we're bad. He says, we don't have any hope. It's a great book I have at home, written by a head of a yeshiva, a high school, yeshiva high school in Israel, who wrote a book for boys who have had troubles, ruchnius troubles. So what's his big pitch to the adolescent boys? Is exactly this pitch. He talks about what's called the nachash. What the nachash is yish. It's the creeping in, not before you made the mistake, not before you did or saw or ate, or it's what happens afterwards. It's that pernicious feeling of hopelessness. He says that's what you need to battle. And that's what the adolescents, he says, are struggling with. Everybody makes mistakes. The question is, how do you deal with it? Dr. Pelkovitz likes to talk about the difference between guilt and shame. Each one of those, although they're different, has potential positive elements and potential negative elements. Guilt is important. We need to address the things that we did, and we need to feel bad about them. That's part of tshuva. But sometimes shame, when it's in a toxic manner, when it's in an unhealthy way, the shame aspect of guilt could lead to powerlessness and hopelessness and yish. And a person feels like, I've gone this far, you know, what's the difference anymore? That's the work of the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is saying to you, Vayirei Osanu, you're bad. You don't have any hope. Don't bother. You know, you already did this far, so who cares? That's the Mitzrayim talking. We need to get out of that. We need to make sure that we're in a mindset that says, you made a mistake? Everybody makes mistakes. You went far gone? Doesn't matter. The Rabbanu Shalom took us out. Think about it. We were in the Mem Tes Shari Tom. We don't even know what that means. We have no hasaga of what type of spiritual depravity we were in at that point. And yet the Rabbanu Shalom says, B'ni b'chor v'yumi Yisrael. We're going on a journey together. We're going to write a story together. It's called Shir HaShirim. So Rabbanu Shalom didn't give up on us. Don't give up on yourself. Don't believe it when the Mitzrim say, Vayarei Osanu, that you don't have worth. Everyone has worth. Everybody needs to work on their self-esteem, and that's something the Yetzer Hara tries to take away from us. Number 8. Pesach. Pesach Matzah Maror. So just one word about Pesach. You notice that in the story, in the Chumash, there's a lot of emphasis on the house. Inside the house and outside the house. And how they had to stay inside the house and they had to put a plug on the doorpost so that nobody would go outside because the mashkas wouldn't get them. So what's the significance of the fact that they were inside the house? So I was wondering if maybe it relates to this. What is the most important thing to provide a child? Because right now, the creation of the Jewish people, it's like the Medrash says, Ubar Yerach Imo. It's like it's a goyim care of goy. It's like birthing a calf from a cow. So the idea is that when we're born as a nation on Pesach, we're like little children. So I was thinking that the most important thing to provide a child is actually not shelter. It's not even clothing or food. It's to provide a safe place. a safe, loving environment. And even before love, it's just plain safe. Right? And that's something that's a challenge that we talk about today, how to make sure that children have safe places. Lo Aleinu, there's nothing I could even imagine that's more horrible for a child than to be in a home which is not safe for them. Because if a child's trust in their parents is frayed, if Lo Aleinu v'al kol Yisrael, no one in the world should know from such a thing that they should be abused by their parent, so then they have no anchor. How do they even function? How do they operate? The first thing that a child needs is some place that's safe, that they feel safe, that they know is safe. Where's that? That's their home. That's the most important thing about a home, is that a child should always feel safe. God forbid, sometimes children have difficulties outside the home. They struggle with bullying and all kinds of different things that are out there in the world. But you know, the most important thing is they should know when they come home, they have a safe place to come home to. And that starts when they're very young. That's what we provide for them when they're little. From the time that they're in a bassinet, they feel that they are in a place which is safe for them. Kivyachol, so to speak, maybe that's what the Rebbe Shlomo is trying to model for us. He's modeling for us that here you are, your little kids, your infants. You know what you should do? Stay inside. And I'm going to make sure you feel safe. I'm going to be outside, and there's going to be a lot of craziness outside. There's going to be death. There's going to be destruction. But you know what? Just stay inside with me, and I'm going to make sure you feel safe. You feel that you have a warm, safe place. And that's how we start our relationship. That's one aspect. And I think you could even take it to the next level, which is the Rebbeinu Shlomo is telling us, you know what? At a certain point, kids, you're going to have to grow up, and you're going to have to go out into the world. And it's scary out there. And there are things that happen out there that are not going to be in consonance with what I think is proper for you. And it's not going to be pretty. But you should always remember, you can come home. You always have the home that's going to be your anchor. That's going to be the place that's your, so to speak, your center. Like your moral and ethical base is your home. So what do? Every year, we recreate Pesach Mitzrayim in our own homes. We bedavka stay in the house to remind ourselves, yes, we're going to spend a lot of time during the year outside and dealing with all kinds of foreign ideas and foreign individuals and all kinds of things. But you know what? Tonight, we're going to be at home. We're going to be safe. We're going to feel the love from God. And we're going to strengthen ourselves so that we can go out. Matzah. So there is a fascinating observation from Rav Shagar, who I've mentioned before, Rav Shimon Gershon Rosenberg. So Rav Shagar talks about the Zohar, which he does often. The Zohar describes matzah as nama de mehemnusa, rosa de mehemnusa. It's the bread, it's the food of hemnusa, of emuna. It's the bread of emuna. So Rav Shagar quotes a piece from the Alter Rebbe, from Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, which is fascinating. He says that the matzah, the emunah that we have at a Seder, is different than any other emunah we had before. When we make Kiddush Friday night, we say two things. Shabbos reminds us of Zecher L'Maaseh Bereishis and Zecher L'Yetzias Mitzrayim. So Rav Shagar points out that Alter Rebbe is explaining, and he develops it, in this sefer called Zman Shel Cheiros. It's essays from Rav Shagar about Pesach, published posthumously from his manuscripts and Shiurim. He says, everybody in the world, Jewish, non-Jewish, any background, can all come to emuna in the Ribbono Shel Olam through Maaseh Bereishis. Because people who connect in that way with Briyas HaOlam, with the natural world, they find this wonder. There is a way for everybody to connect to God. Everybody can feel that connection to God. And you see it, all kinds of people. They believe in God and they connect to God. It doesn't matter whether Jewish, observant, religious, who knows, whatever they are. But that's only one half of the story for us, because we have another level of emunah. The emunah that we develop at the Seder, that is symbolized through the matzah, it's not just the emunah of Zecher L'Maaseh Bereishis. It's Zecher L'Yetzias Mitzrayim. What is Yetzias Mitzrayim? It's a personal interaction with God. It's a feeling that God is taking care of me.
I'm involved, he's involved, we have this ongoing personal relationship. And that's a new dimension of emuna that we are acknowledging and we're celebrating at the Seder. It's the relationship. It's the feeling of closeness. It's that experiential aspect of emuna that's different than the cognitive or theological one. It's another important aspect that when we think about our emuna in Hashem, it's not just, well, for many people, philosophical proofs and arguments are important, which for some they are, for some they're not. But the idea of our emuna not just being based on this universal type of emuna, which is important, but the idea of actually feeling a closeness to God and his involvement in my life and how much I matter to him and he matters to me, that's something that the matzah symbolizes because it's an additional emuna. It's a new emuna. It's the emuna in Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the last observation is an observation that Rav Huttner shares. Awesome idea in the Pachad Yitzchak on the concept of Hallel. And just one crumb of this idea, it's in the 11th Mamar here in the Pachad Yitzchak. Isn't it interesting that our Hallel on the Seder night takes on a whole new dimension? Usually Hallel is just the prakim that we are familiar with, but tonight, on the Seder night, we're going to say Hallel HaGadol, which is going to include Nishmas, and it also ends with a specific bracha. In the times of the Mishnah, when we say Hallel, let's say on Rosh Chodesh, for example, for sure, because it's a minug, different people had different minhagim regarding the blessing of Hallel. Everybody agrees you say a blessing at the beginning. The question is, do you say a blessing at the end? So that's a machlokas. Makom shenoagu, some places they did, some places they didn't. But on Pesach night, you do the whole thing, and you must finish with a bracha. It's a birchas hashir. And he wonders, why not? So, he quotes a fascinating Rashi. Rashi says in Megillah, the Gemara says that we say a shira when we went me'avdus l'cheirus, certainly when we go from mavis to chayim, lo kol shekin. That's what the Gemara says. That Gemara, by the way, is a very central point of discussion when you talk about Yom Ha'atzma'ut. Whether or not you say halal on Yom Ha'atzma'ut is part of the discussion of this Gemara, because the Gemara says you say shira, you're supposed to say shira on Purim, so why not? The Gemara has different answers. One of them is that actually Mikra Megillah is the shira on Purim. So there is a, all right, now I'm getting off track, but I can't help myself. There is a Me'iri. The Me'iri says that if you're in a desert with no Megillah on Purim, you say Hallel. Because one opinion in the Gemara is that Kriyasa Zuhi Leila, so if you can't say the Megillah, you should say Hallel. We don't pass like that, but that's Akedei Kach. So that's part of the discussion about Yom Ha'atzmaut. Wait a second, the Gemara says if you went from Avdus to Cheirus, you should say Shira. Certainly, when you go from Mavis L'chaim, from death to life, you should say Shira. So that's a discussion of the poskim about Yom Ha'atzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim. So Rashi says, when did they say Shira when they went from Avdus to Cheirus? So Rashi says, they said Shira on the Yom Suf. So the Acharonim ask on this Rashi, wait a second. This discussion is about the general principle of Hallel. That was a totally different thing, and actually there is no requirement to say Shira for the Yom Suf today. Right? There's no commemoration today to say Shira for Kriyas Yom Suf. Is there? No. It's the same Hallel that you say on Pesach like for everything else. So what does Rashi mean that you're going to learn the laws of Hallel from the Shira of Az Yashir, but Az Yashir we don't commemorate today. So how can you learn Hallel today? You know, how can you talk about Yom Ha'atzma'ut and Hallel and the halachas of Hallel? How can you talk about it in the context of Rashi's invoking something that's not pertinent for generations? So Rav Huttner has an awesome idea. He suggests, essentially, this is my framing of this idea of Rav Huttner, is that actually the Hallel at Seder night is also a commemoration of the Hallel of Kriyas Yom Suf. Why? Why didn't they say Shira on the night of the Seder? Why didn't they say Az Yashir, the night of the Seder? Because they weren't totally free. Why not? Because the Egyptians were still behind them. The Egyptians could come after them at any minute. The only time they said Az Yashir was when the Egyptians were gone and they saw they were dead and they knew now they were totally free. That's the conclusion of the process of freedom. So what happens at the Seder? Essentially what's happening is we're actually compacting the process of Geula into one night. We're starting the Hallel at the night of the Seder, but we're going to finish the Hallel, so to speak. We're going to include the Hallel of Az Yashir. Because today, we're done and done. So it makes sense now to say a full Hallel with extra Hallel HaGadol with the Birchas Hashir. Because that is going also on the Az Yashir. So it's an interesting thing to think about. When do we commemorate Az Yashir? The answer is, you commemorate it the Seder. Because the Seder is both. It's the beginning of the redemption process of Yetzias Mitzrayim on the night of the Seder, but it also has this remez, what he calls the Gemar Geulasam, the conclusion of their redemption. And therefore, an Hallel on the night of the Seder, that's part and parcel of it, because that's the Gemar HaGeula. Because today we have, essentially, the whole thing is finished together. So the Hallel that we're going to say has two elements. It has the night of the Seder element, and it also has the Az Yashir element. I thank everybody for coming. I wish you all a Chag Kosher V'Sameach.